episode of Her Healthful. I'm Araste, your host, and I'm recording in the evening for once. I usually record in the afternoons or in the mornings, but today the day got away from me and I still wanted to record, so here we are, and I'm excited to continue the attachment series. The only update I really have is that I'm going to Miami next week, and I'm so excited to just get into the sun and out of Toronto, even though it's been surprisingly warm here. It's supposed to be like 12 degrees on Friday, which is insane because I had a yearly reminder, you know how like the photos app says this time last year, and it was literally a blizzard in Toronto this time last year, and I'm just like, now it feels like spring, which is a treat in itself in Toronto because we don't get a spring. Like, we have maybe 1-2 weeks where we have spring in May, I would say, because April I still consider that winter here. But I don't know how it's gonna go this year. Maybe we'll actually get a spring, which is exciting, and if we don't, we're getting it right now, at least a glimpse of it. But every time I go on a trip, I'm not the most last minute packer, but I feel like I'm still pretty last minute. Like, I will pack the day before, and I really want to start packing like 2 days before. I think that's perfect because then you don't feel so rushed. Like, you can separate clothes into one day and toiletries, makeup, last minute stuff into the other day. I just think doing it in one day is so stressful because you don't know if you forgot anything or if you're choosing the best outfits. It's just a lot of last minute stress. But the problem is that time and a time crunch is what motivates me. So that stress is actually what gets me to finish it, which sounds crazy, but it's why I'm a procrastinator and what I want to work on this year. But hopefully, like, I leave on Sunday, so ideally I'd love to start packing on Friday. I'm already looking at my schedule and I have such a busy week, so we might be starting on Saturday. It's fine, we'll get it done. I also think a lot of it is like the pre-trip errands, like getting your nails done and a facial and all of that. I got my nails done today, so that's off the list. I don't think I'm gonna get a facial. I might get a spray tan because I am pale as a ghost. I don't know if I can arrive in Miami when everybody is tan and golden. So we might just do that. And then I love to shower and do my hair before a trip because then you're prepped and ready to go when you land and you don't have to waste any time, especially if you have thick hair like me. It takes a while to style your hair and everything. It's so nice that I'm going to Miami because I can still bring my Dyson. When I went to Europe, the Dysons just don't work there. You have to buy a whole separate European Dyson if you want to use it, which was rough because obviously I want to look cute in Europe, but my hair was just being straightened or curled. It just wasn't the vibe. It wasn't as good as my Dyson. So you guys know I'm a diehard Dyson fan forever. The Airwrap is literally my best friend. I use it every single day, and I always get questions about whether people think it's worth it and whether it would work for their hair. Honestly, if you have a Dyson store near you, you can do a demo in the store. It doesn't hurt to just go and see if it would work on your hair. Mine is thick and wavy and frizzy, and it works beautifully on mine. So I think if you have thick hair, you're already pretty good and pretty set. But I know a lot of people who have thinner hair than me, and it still works on them, but it might not hold the style as well. And my style, like, it honestly holds for like 3-4 days until I touch it up again. That is the blessing and curse of having thick hair. It styles so nicely, but it is so much to maintain and style, and it's time consuming. So grass is always greener. I always say you want what you can't have. But I don't even know how I started talking about the Dyson. I always find a way to just plug it in because I'm obsessed. But I think that's all I have in terms of like exciting updates now that I've been doing the podcast consistently every week. Or it might just be me, like my life just might be boring. But I don't know, on a week-to-week basis, I just feel like we're all living life. Maybe we're doing a few things on the weekend. And what did I even do this past weekend? Oh yeah, I had my Galentine's. Did I not update you guys on this? Oh, I guess I didn't. I guess every episode I've been like, I'm having a dinner party, but I didn't actually talk about it. I posted a bunch of stories on my Instagram and I save everything to a highlight called dinner party, and it was actually really cute. I feel like I'm getting better and better at them. I think I mentioned in a prior episode how I had waited so long to host them because I have an island in my kitchen. I don't have like a dining table, so I thought it was just weird to host at an island, but I'm like, that's all I have. And if I can make it cute, then why not? So I've hosted my first one in October. It was like a fall themed one. And then I did one in December, and I just did one in January and February. So I've done four. I'm getting better and better. I'm definitely learning how to manage my time. And my decorations are just like stepping up a notch every single time. This last one was probably my favorite tablescape. I just had so many little details. And even though I am scrambling to the last minute getting everything ready, this time was a little bit less hectic and I was a little bit more on top of it, but still, you underestimate how long the little details are gonna take. Like, I swear, just tying ribbons on glasses, why does that take like 20 minutes? It's just the most little detail, but it still makes a big difference. And I'm just glad to have been able to gather some girlfriends. I think Galentine's is just like cute to celebrate the woman in your life. And yeah, it was a fun night. It was a good way to start off the month, and I did it so early because I'm gone next week, so I still wanted to have a Galentine's. I thought it would be obviously better to do it before Valentine's Day officially. I said I was gonna do a dinner party every month, and I think that is a good frequency for me. The last two felt very close to each other. I think they were like 2 weeks apart because I did the January one the end of the month and then the February one at the beginning of the month, so they actually were quite close together. But the next one I'm gonna do like end of March or something, and I have no idea what the theme for that is gonna be. Some of my friends suggested like St. Patty's like green theme. I feel like that could be cute because I want to do a spring one, but I feel like for spring it would have to be in April or May where it's like vibrant colors and just like pastels and flowers. All the flowers, I have flowers at every single one, but the spring ones are going to be so freaking cute. So obviously you can tell I get excited about the small decorations and stuff. I think I get more excited about that than the food. I obviously love cooking and baking, but I think just like seeing it come together with all of the intricate details is really what gets me excited. So who knows, maybe I'll be hosting some for anybody to attend in the future, although not at my house. It would be like at an event space, because a few of you have been like, I need to go to one of these. Like, where do I sign up? And I'm so flattered. Like, this is literally my fourth one that I have hosted, but I enjoy it so much. So let me see if I can fathom doing it on a larger scale. It would probably be for like 5-10 people max, because I don't know if I can handle the pressure of event planning for so many people, but the idea of it gets me excited. So stay tuned if you have been interested in attending one. Anyways, let's get into today's episode. So last episode, we talked about anxious attachment style. And if you didn't listen to that, that's okay. You can listen to this one first. They are standalone, but if you really want to learn about each attachment style in depth, then I suggest you listen to the one before as well. So this week's is going to be on avoidant attachment, and similar format to last week where we talk about the signs, the causes, and how you can start healing your avoidant attachment style to get to a more secure place. So the names of the attachment styles are quite descriptive, and avoidant refers to somebody who has the tendency to avoid emotional closeness or intimacy, and they're kind of very self-protective in that sense. Like, they don't want to get close to other people and be vulnerable. So I mentioned last week how people with an anxious attachment style have a negative view of themselves, but a positive view of others. So they might have low self-esteem, but they view their partner as like somebody that should be put on a pedestal. Like, it's not about others, it's about them. Avoidant attachment style, however, these people have a mostly positive view of themselves, but they have a negative view of others. And I think that's where the key distinction comes here, because these attachment styles are essentially opposite. And so I think I mentioned last week that an anxious and an avoidant combination is kind of toxic, because one is chasing, the other is running away, and they are opposites. So it really might be an opposites attract at the start, but then deep down and as the relationship progresses, you might notice that this just like isn't working. People who are avoidantly attached often describe themselves as super independent, and they are are self-reliant, but that might just be another way of them avoiding emotional rejection and also protecting themselves from even more potential pain and abandonment that they may have experienced as a child. So they can be distant, aloof, they might ghost you without any hesitation. And if you were an anxious person, you would be like, why is this person not texting me back? Why are they ghosting me? And it would just be a very hard cycle to be in for either person. So as attachment theory states, all of these styles originate from childhood and how we were with our parents, or how our parents were with us rather. So for example, people who have a secure attachment style, their environment was super stable, it was safe, they had a parent who was sensitive to their needs, they let them be safe and protected, but also let them explore the world. So last week we said how somebody with an anxious attachment style, they didn't have parents that were balanced in a sense that they could have been helicopter parents, they could have been inconsistent in their parenting or have boundaries or rules that didn't really make sense. When we come to talk about avoidant attached individuals, they may have experienced just like not much responsiveness from their parents. And all responsiveness means is how somebody responds to the needs of somebody else. And it's one of the most important things in any relationship. So if as a child, somebody needed help and they asked their parents for help or they sought it in some way, they might have been ignored, dismissed by their parents, invalidated. So that could lead to the belief that reaching out to somebody like their parents might be useless because every single time they were met with rejection or they weren't taken very seriously. And if that cycle repeats over and over again with one parent, with both, then that's going to be so internalized and it's just going to carry on till adulthood with romantic relationships, and it'll eventually, you know, manifest as an avoidant attachment style. This responsiveness could have been emotional, like not providing comfort and soothing when maybe they were going through something that was emotionally hard in times of stress, or it could have been a lack of physical responsiveness. Say if the child scraped their knee or something and the parent was just like not there to bandage them up or didn't care enough to, and they were kind of on their own and had to fend for themselves a lot. This might not have even been intentional by the parents. Like if a parent was working a lot or odd hours, then of course they weren't there to be responsive, because half of responsiveness is just being there, like physically being with the child. If you're not there, you can't be responsive. So that child again realizes that they have to fend for themselves, their parents aren't around all the time, and it's just like their own world and their own needs have to be tended to by themselves. They learn to be very independent, autonomous, rely on themselves. These people might get a job very, very young, move out right away, just all the things where they are kind of forced to grow up quickly. And it's not only about your childhood experiences, just to like stress, it could be personality traits, just your experiences maybe with your siblings or any other life experiences or your genetics. Like there's so much at play, but I think because childhood is at the root of attachment theory, it just makes sense to talk about it as a major cause. It's the first relationship we've ever had. So just a side note. So as an adult, what are some signs of an avoidant attachment style? Like I mentioned, independence is at the heart of this. And listen, I am somebody who loves my independence. I love my alone time. I love being able to do what I want to do. In my relationship, I have my own friends, my own hobbies, my own vacations. Like I don't have to always be with my partner, and that's just something that's so important to me. But at the same time, people who are truly avoidant, they are so independent that they think the independence is more important than the closeness, which is obviously not the case. It has to be a balance of both. And if you even want to have a relationship, you need to be close by definition. So it's to a point where it's quite extreme. A next piece is vulnerability. These people do not like showing their emotions and their vulnerable side, the fact that they might feel things that they don't necessarily want to share with others because they don't trust other people. Again, this is about not themselves and not that they think they're a bad person, but they just don't trust other people. So they might downplay their emotions, suppress them, keep them to themselves, and this might make them seem quite cold and aloof. Maybe they're really dry over text, or they shy away from any vulnerable or close questions. They're just turned off by that. It's just going to take a lot for them to open up to you, which is the next point. They don't trust people. They don't trust others. So why would they tell you anything? They rely on themselves for any emotional support. They won't come to you. And they just overall struggle sharing and communicating. And I think that's where it gets really difficult, because communication is at the heart of relationships. So is being vulnerable, so is getting close. It's just hard for these people to not only initiate a relationship, but then also maintain it, because a relationship progresses as people get more vulnerable with each other. And so if they can't even take that first step, it's probably gonna end before it really begins. One interesting thing I read online is that a lot of the times the people who are an insecure style, like anxious or avoidant, it's not apparent to them, like it's a subconscious thing. So I feel like awareness is the first step, because people might not even realize that they are avoiding. Like, I read this one thing about a girl who said she was like dating guy after guy, and every single time she found something wrong with them, like she would always break it off because there was like a fatal flaw. And she eventually realized that this always happened as soon as the men wanted more commitment and they wanted to get closer. And like, she realized she had an avoidant attachment and is working through that, but it might have all been subconscious before, because she rationalized it as there's something wrong with them, when really that was an excuse for her not to get close to other people. Just so interesting. We tell ourselves lies without even knowing it, and then tell ourselves stories that we think are accurate, but they're not. Okay, so what triggers avoidant attachment? Because there are some things that might make it manifest in a more stronger way and it's more apparent. So in the scenario I was just talking about with the girl, she started to shy away when people wanted her to open up more. So one of them is the other person wanting to get close. Somebody might be calling or texting often, and that would really trigger an avoidant attached person, because it's just too much. You know, they like their independence, and it just might be very extreme at the start. Anything that has to do with commitment, for example, marriage, children, going away on a vacation, anything that ties them down for there even to be a future, not only will they not ask you for emotional comfort, but if you are asking them for emotional comfort, you will not get it. Because they don't trust you and they don't want to be soothing you. They don't necessarily know how to, because they haven't had the experience. And then the last thing is with physical intimacy. There might just be some struggles there, because it has to be only when they're in the mood, and it is an act of vulnerability, just being intimate with somebody. So I can see that not always going well for them if they are constantly being detached and avoidant. Something that is unique to avoidantly attached people is that they will use deactivating strategies. And what I mean by this is they will essentially deactivate a relationship by pulling away and severing any ties with the other person. So for example, they'll break up with the partner, they will move away, they will stop texting you, they will emotionally distance themselves from you, they will stop being in the friend group, anything that serves as a function of creating space between them and the person they want to get away from. And this is essentially a self-preserving, a self-protective mechanism for them to not experience pain and disappointment again, like they did when they were a child. Even if it's at a subconscious level, and you know, they don't remember them with their parents as forming this attachment style, it might be rooted in that. But it's so difficult, because the more people pull away and sever these ties, it actually makes it less likely for them to open up. Because even if they got to a stage where they were the closest they've ever been with somebody, which might not have been that close, they break the tie off before it could get even closer and potentially benefit them by showing them it's not that scary and people can be trusted. So it's just a little sad that the thing they are avoiding is what could help them push through it. And it's just an act of self-protection when it gets too uncomfortable. Okay, so I feel like we got into the nitty-gritty of avoidantly attached people. Let's get into how to heal this attachment style, because I think it's quite different from healing the anxious attachment style from last week. So get your pen and paper out if you resonated with this and you really want to take some next steps to healing your style. I think one of the obvious ones stems from what I just said, and it is to stop using deactivating strategies and just recognize when you're doing it. So it might have really clicked with you when I was describing the past scenario and just what I was talking about in the last few minutes about pulling away from people, breaking up, moving, ghosting, and realize that you do that a lot and it's just like a way for you to cope. But yeah, the first step is recognizing that you do that and then realizing that you shouldn't be using that as a way to cope, because you might be missing out on some really great relationships and the potential to trust other people and get close with them without having it be such a dangerous and hard, uncomfortable thing, which it will be at the start. But it's about pushing through the discomfort and not pulling away. And what goes hand in hand with this is communication. So if you are aware that you're the type of person who might ghost, you might run for the hills when things get too close, it honestly doesn't hurt telling the other person that you just have those tendencies and you find it hard to get close to somebody and be vulnerable. Giving somebody that heads up makes such a difference, because they now know what to expect and what they're getting themselves into, and to just have the mental preparation of, oh, I might have to put in a bit more work and be a bit more patient for this other person to be vulnerable and open up. And it's not about me. It's just something that they are going through. It just makes a world of a difference, and communication can only help, because say if they're not down and they're like, I don't have time for this, or the patience, like I need somebody who's emotionally available, at least you know then and there. You don't have to waste your time on that, and it just frees you up to find the person who you can be with and who might be maybe more securely attached, for example. And somebody who's anxiously attached may need a lot more from you, and that just might not be what is going to serve you. So it's always great to be communicating early on, and even the communication could be a form of vulnerability, and I get that. But if you just want to save everybody the turmoil and potential heartache, just do it upfront. Another tip I have is to lean on other relationships, especially friendships. So having the view that others can't be trusted can kind of be broken when you realize all of the amazing potential friendships that you have, even if they're just like one or two, because those can serve as evidence that relationships can actually flourish and you don't have to do everything on your own. People can be in your life, and if you don't want to get vulnerable in a romantic way, it's great to start first by being vulnerable in your friendships and telling people things, you know, you've never told anybody, or something you're struggling with. You can start small, but friendships seem lower stake than romantic relationships, obviously, but it's a great way to just get yourself to practice doing that, to feel the discomfort, but not at the highest level possible. And even with something like therapy, if you really don't want to tell things to people you know and be vulnerable with them, a therapist is a great start, because they're essentially a stranger. Obviously, you get to know each other more, and they especially get to know you. But maybe you don't even want to start with a friendship. You want to start with somebody who doesn't even know you. So a therapist could be a great starting point to get vulnerable, and then work yourself up friendships, siblings, and then maybe a romantic partner. It's basically exposure therapy, because if you are afraid of emotional rejection and just can't trust others, you have to build yourself up to do that. Related to that, don't be afraid to ask people for favors. I think a big part of deconstructing that independence mindset, which I'm not saying it's bad to be independent, but like in the extreme cases of somebody who is super avoidant, breaking that down involves you being interdependent and actually not doing everything yourself. So ask somebody for a favor, ask for help here and there. If you don't want it to be something huge, it can be a minor little thing like borrowing a book or something that just involves you asking for help, essentially, and not always relying on yourself. Essentially just trying to break the idea that you must do everything by yourself, because no one's looking out for you, and what's the point of asking? Trust me, there's a point. There are people who care for you and would be willing to help, but again, it's hard because you've grown up with that, and it's going to be a slow and patient process. It really helps if you end up finding somebody who's securely attached, because this won't be as much of a turnoff for you. I don't even know how it would be with two avoidant people. I hadn't really thought about that before. It might be nice because both of them want to be independent, but at the same time, I don't think either person is going to grow or change, because you're kind of just like validating each other. And I don't know if there would just be like any growth in the relationship. Like, would that even last? Who knows? I just think that being with a secure person is the most helpful scenario you could probably find yourself in. So just to keep a note on that. And lastly, get comfortable with expressing your emotions. I feel like a lot of avoidantly attached people just tend to suppress and hide their emotions. They keep it to themselves. But with that, what can happen is it gets bottled up, and then, you know, it might be a very intense reaction one day, which seems very random and out of the blue for that person. So you just don't want it to get to that point, but also you want to learn and teach yourself that it's okay to express emotions. It's okay to just show that you're human, and it doesn't have to be something intense. And what can help with that is communicating in a way that's very clear and using I statements that actually conveys what is making you upset and why, without blaming the other person, for example. So you could say, I feel overwhelmed when I'm left to take up the garbage and I would like some assistance next time, instead of, you never do anything. Why do I have to do everything? It's just like a shift in language. Obviously, that could be a whole episode, but expressing your emotions in healthy ways is a key part. But first, you have to get to a point of expressing anything at all and believing that that's okay without being rejected or having any backlash. So I think those are the main things somebody with an avoidant attachment style could work on and could really try to target, whether you're journaling and just gaining self-awareness to a point where you actually act on it though, and it's not just something internalized. You need to take steps towards it, because that's the only way change is gonna happen. Okay, and that's all I have for this week's episode on avoidantly attached people. So I hope you enjoyed that. I'm still deciding how to do the last episode of the series. I think I'm going to be combining disorganized and secure. We'll end off on a high note. We'll end off with secure. And disorganized is essentially a mix of anxious and avoidant, but I still think there are some nuances that might differ when the combination of them comes together, instead of each of them individually. So stay tuned for that next week. And until then, I hope you have an amazing day, an amazing week, and I'll catch you next time. Mwah. Bye.